Good morning. The House will come to order. Please stand if you're able, including our guests in the gallery. The colors will be posted this morning by Troop 514 from the Blue Mountain Boy Scout Council in the Grand. They are guests of Representative Greg Smith, and our flag salute and this process will be led this morning by Noel March. Welcome.
Color guard attention. Color guard forward, march. Color guard halt. Prepare to post colors. Post colors. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Scott and salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Two. Color guard, return to ranks. About face. Color guard forward, march.
Thank you very much. Please remain standing. Will you join me in a word of prayer? God, we're grateful for the gift of a new day. We're grateful for the gift of the opportunity to serve in these challenging, angst-ridden times. As we enter the final couple weeks of this session, we ask you for wisdom, that we can look out at the decisions before us and make the right choices. Grant us the gift of wisdom. We also ask for the gift of patience amidst all the pushing and prodding and pulling. Give us the calm to listen, to wait, to be open to you, to our colleagues, to our constituents, to those who need to be heard. Thank you so much for the gifts of wisdom and the gifts of patience, even amidst these challenging times. In your precious name we pray. Amen. You may be seated. Thank you again to Troop 514. Again, from LeGrand, we appreciate your service. You guys were right on cue this morning. You could put the Oregon National Guard or the Oregon State Police right on your same level. Representative Smith.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, good morning. On the side aisle, I'd like to introduce to you those fine young men who presented the colors this morning. If they would stand up and come on over to the aisle there. First, I'd like to introduce to you Alex Johnson. Alex is a Star Scout, and he's 15 years old. We have Noel March, who is a Star Scout, and he is 14 years old. We have Dominique Clay, a Tenderfoot, who is 13. We have Dale Tover, who is a second class and is 12 years old. Raise your hand there. There you go. All right. We've got Zach Howe, who is a Star Scout and 15 years old. We have William Densmore, who's a Star Scout, 15 years old. Kai Hatton, a Star Scout, 14. We have Dylan McHarg. Did I pronounce that correctly? McHarg? Okay. Who is a second class and age 14. We've got Michael Wilson, second class, 12. Dakota Ashley, who is a second class and 12 years old. We've got Kodiak Ashley, who is a Tenderfoot and 11, and Connor Miles, who's a Tenderfoot 14. Colleagues, I know that each and every one of these young men are going to grow up and to become Eagle Scouts and productive members of the state of Oregon. because I know Troop 514 and all the good work they're doing. Would you please extend courtesies, along with I see Judge Eric Valentine. Is that Judge Eric Valentine there? Welcome to the Capitol. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Great to have you all here. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Further courtesies, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like you all to extend courtesies and honor my wonderful committee staffer, Sandy Thiele Circa, who's here today. Sandy's done an extraordinary job. We passed a ton of bills, and she had the hardest job of any of the committee staffers because she had to put up with me. And she did that with good humor and diligence and affection. And we had a really great session. And Sandy, I thank you very much for all that you've done for us this session.
Yes, we all do extend our thanks. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to direct your attention to the side aisle over here. I have a guest today that, quite frankly, I just got the privilege of meeting this morning. Would you please welcome Walt Wondersleben? Did I get it? I was practicing. And he is the pastor of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Lebanon. And so would you please welcome him to the house and greet him as he wanders around his capital today.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Any further courtesies? Our moment in Oregon history. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adopted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by William Robbins, who is Emeritus Distinguished Professor of History at Oregon State University. And I am pleased to do this because the Smith family, of which I'm going to start about the beginning, continues to be a prominent part of the Coos Bay area and that old area of Marshfield. Charles Axel Smith became, for a time, one of Oregon's most powerful lumbermen, buying up huge tracts of forest land and developing the largest mill in the area. A native of Sweden, Smith emigrated to the U.S. to become one of Minnesota's leading lumbermen by the late 19th century. With his company's timber stands rapidly being cut over, Smith and other lumbermen from the upper Midwest began purchasing through legal and illegal means stands of virgin forest in the Pacific Northwest. While his timber locators were identifying timberland and blocking up an enormous forested estate, C.A. Smith sent 7 Minnesota millwrights to Marshfield, now Coos Bay, to design and lay plans for a huge state-of-the-art sawmill on the bay. Still, other Minnesotans descended on Coos Bay to set up logging camps and to ready a transportation system to supply the mill with logs. The big mill, the envy of lumber manufacturers far and wide, established a reputation as Coos Bay's country's largest employer, county's largest employer. Like many of his lumber industry peers, Charles Axel Smith was overextended with heavy capital expenditures for expansion, the indebtedness on his timberlands, and the expenses of building logging railroads. The C.A. Smith Company quickly ran into trouble when perpetually gutted markets produced low lumber prices. In 1916, a creditors committee reorganized the properties under a new corporate name, Coos Bay Lumber Company. From that point forward, investors in San Francisco and Chicago controlled the old Smith empire on Coos Bay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nice touch how you got in Coos Bay country in there. Coos Bay trying to take over the world as usual. I also want to recognize, and if you could stand back at my desk on the floor, Stephen Beckler, who's been an intern with the Speaker's Office all session. Today is his last day with us, and he is officially graduated from PSU this Saturday. He's a senior this year, so congratulations. He's originally from Madison, Wisconsin, but I think has become a true Oregonian amidst this process, and he's going to be pursuing a master's degree starting next year in public policy at PSU. So thanks for your great work. Good luck next year. Any further courtesies? The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Matthews. Representative Matthews. Off the floor, Representative Clem. Representative Clem. Off the floor, Representative Jensen. Representative Jensen. Off the floor, excused for House business, Representative Shields, Representative Barker, Representative Krieger. All other members are present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate on House Bill 3405 and House Bill 2649 are laid on table. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bills 16, 112, 118, 170, 171, 198, 203, 205, 235, 277, 400, 623, 731, 771, SCR 12, 13, House Bill 2080, 2599, and 3236.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SCR 16, congratulating Portland Trailblazers on success of 2008-2009 season.
Measure read for the first time has passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. And because we're missing a few folks, even though Representative Beyer is ready, we're actually going to temporarily advance to third reading of House bills. Representative Beyer, thank you for your patience. The chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to the order of business of third reading of House bills. This will allow us to stay in propositions and motions so we can come back to them and pick them up later, but to do House bills in the meantime. Is there any objection to temporarily advancing to the order of third reading of House bills? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 2178, relating to veteran service officers and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2178. Also first up, Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2178A creates the Campus Veterans Service Officers Program in the Department of Veterans Affairs. The purpose of this program is to assist student veterans by placing veteran service officers directly on college campuses. These officers will work to ensure that student veterans obtain the maximum amount of state and federal benefits available to them. They will also be available to provide general counseling services to student veterans. The bill requires the department to serve students at all of Oregon's community colleges and OUS campuses. House Bill 5048, the budget bill for the Department of Veterans Affairs, establishes five veterans service officer positions for this purpose, and the funds of the program will come from other funds, and it's $392,482 of other funds. These five officers will each cover multiple campuses to ensure that all campuses are served. The budget establishes this as a pilot program. The agency must report on program outcomes next session and may request continuation of the program at that time. And your Joint Ways and Means Committee recommends passage of House Bill 2178A.
Further discussion, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is a highest priority issue that came through the House Veterans and Emergency Services Committee as a result of some work that was done during the interim by the Governor's Interim Task Force on Veterans Affairs. We stand solidly behind it. We heard very compelling testimony from a pilot program that was done on Portland State campus, sort of set up a card table and had amazing response from individuals who are on the college campuses and not aware of the veterans programs and benefits that they had available to them. Our federal dollars that come into veterans benefit programs are based on the number of veterans we have registered in Oregon, and oftentimes our younger returning folks, current era veterans, aren't aware of what we could be helping them with thanks to the generosity of our federal government and also that that will build up our numbers overall in Oregon. We have high hopes for this program of turning around some well-deserved federal dollars for Oregon veterans who are back on college campuses and moving on with their life. I urge your support.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Byer, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Voting aye.
Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Garrett votes aye. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Representative Matthews is excused. House Bill 2178A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2180, relating to energy.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2180B. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2180B eliminates the residential energy tax credit and the business energy tax credit for gasoline electric vehicles as of January 1st, 2010. And this would be the type of vehicle, a Prius or a car of that nature. It adds electric vehicle manufacturers to the definition of renewable manufacturing facilities for the purpose of the BETC tax credit. It refines definitions related to the biomass tax credit and tightens them up appropriately given the rather, I'll call it loose nature of those standards to this point. The bill also limits the transfer of the biomass credits on or before the due date of the corresponding tax return. And finally, the bill allows the department to establish by rule a minimum discounted value for the tax credit, and that department is the Department of Energy. Colleagues, this is an excellent bill. It reflects an awful lot of work. It does some very good things for the state of Oregon, and in fact, the tax credit for manufacturing for electric vehicles is added to the bill, and this is a good thing for those small electric car companies we enjoy in our state, and it will help, I hope, move those companies along. The bill also addresses the power or authority of our Department of Energy to establish rules for transfer and issuance of tax credits for biomass operations. This is a good thing. We have not been able to fully utilize the biomass credit because of the lack of clear standards and the lack of a certification of the biomass credits. This is an excellent bill, and I urge your support.
Further discussion? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Thank you. I just wanted to add that I'm very pleased that this bill has included in it the reference to manufacturers of electric vehicles. This is talking about transportation of the future. It's important for the environment, and it's important for affordability as we try to wean ourselves from foreign oil. I also wanted to emphasize that automakers don't have to be just the giant automakers we hear about in Detroit. We have automakers here in Oregon right now who are trying to advance electrical vehicle manufacturing. This is good for all of those people who want to be working in this industry. We have unemployed persons who have been working hard in the RV sector of manufacturing. They are immediately employable in electric vehicle manufacturing, and this is really good for the suppliers of the parts of electric vehicles. So we're talking about helping Oregon business here. I couldn't be more pleased. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to add to the comments from the representative from North Eugene There are a number of beginning manufacturers in Oregon for electric vehicles that are hopefully getting ready to go into the assembly manufacturing stage. In Eugene, the area that I'm most familiar with, we have excess capacity right now, as who doesn't, in the area of parts manufacture, steel, fabrication, assembly. We have RV plants in the neighborhood that are not being utilized. These small companies that we have starting up will be able to make use of all of these facilities and put people back to work. This is a jobs bill. We would then hope to be able to sell these vehicles in Oregon, reduce consumption of fossil fuels, and have appropriate transportation for many, many Oregonians actually manufactured in Oregon. Additionally, the impetus for the electric vehicle manufacturer credit comes from the governor's initiative to try to get one of the major world manufacturers to establish manufacturing in Oregon that could bring hundreds or thousands of jobs to Oregon, not only in the assembly of vehicles, but also in parts manufacture and other things. And, of course, we have companies that are currently working on battery technology. When these companies are able to manufacture inexpensively batteries that can be recharged many times and used for long periods of time at reasonable cost, you can expect this technology to take off, and you can expect the manufacturer of batteries in Oregon to also take off. Colleagues, in addition to the points raised by the representative from District 60, this makes this an excellent bill, and again, and I also urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnitz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, it's hard to be against this bill. However, we're creating things here that we're not sure who's going to be controlling it, how much money it is, and we've just passed a bill that sunsetted all these tax breaks, and now we're putting it back in here for this one trust fund. Question is, why should public education be forced to subsidize renewable energy, even on a modest scale, when Oregon tax ratepayers are now obligated to subsidize it on a massive scale? Enough is enough. Lawmakers' desire to save the earth is understandable, but they ought to keep in mind that we, the people, actually put the bill.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Bentz, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a couple of things. First of all, there has been some concern about whether this bill would apply to three-wheeled vehicles. This bill is silent on that issue, and in fact, the current law would allow these credits to apply to three-wheel electric vehicles. There's also some concern about when this would end. I have not checked, and I do not know the exact date that this would sunset, but there is a sunset that applies to it. This bill reflects a fairly neutral cost because there are credits given and there are credits taken away. At the end of the day, there still is some cost to the state, but it's significantly less than it might have been because we are doing away with the gasoline electric hybrids, which were costing the state around $3 million a year. So this bill actually is economically positive for our state, and I think deserves your support. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. House Bill 2180B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2185, relating to state certification for discharges into water.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2185A. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2185A directs the Environmental Quality Commission to establish by rule a revised schedule of fees for state 401 certificate under the Federal Water Pollution Control Act that are based on the underlying federal license or permit, project size, and the Department of Environmental Quality's related costs. During the 09-11 biennium, the Department of Environmental Quality anticipates using existing staff and working with the advisory committee to develop a new 401 certification fee schedule that addresses the issues identified in the bill. DEQ anticipates implementing a revised fee schedule in the 2011-2013 biennium and including this information with the department's 2011-13 budget request. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 2185A.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes no. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Esquivel votes no. House Bill 2185A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Gilliam, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, it's to ask unanimous consent that we would return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Gilliam requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A constituent of mine from Molino has joined us here in the upper deck, and I'd like you to extend courtesies to Benjamin Dover, and he's with Pacific Rim Student Exchange. Student, why you tagged me? Thank you, Mr. Please give courtesies to our guests. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much. Any further courtesies while we're here? We have some different carriers and people who want to speak on different bills who are out. Representative Olson, are you and Representative Barton prepared to advance to Senate Bill 570 at this point? Representative Barton, you prepared for that as well, Senate Bill 570. The chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to the order of third reading of Senate bills. We'll come back to the remaining House bills, as we will also come back to the remaining propositions and motions. Is there objection to temporarily advancing to the order of third reading of Senate bills? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the first bill.
Senate Bill 570, relating to commerce and metal property.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 570B. Representative Olson, followed by Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. Senate Bill 570, the long-awaited bill dealing with metal theft, has arrived. This bill passed on the Senate floor with unanimous support and comes to you from the House Judiciary Committee, where it received unanimous support as well. As you are aware, a work group consisting of Senators Brian Boquist and Floyd Prezansky and Representatives Brent Barton and myself were assigned to review all the bills related to metal theft and develop one bill. Senate Bill 570 is a fairly comprehensive bill that does, what it does is it creates increased sanctions to offenders, gives additional tools to law enforcement to combat metal theft, protects agriculture, construction, transportation, and utilities, and adds more accountability to the industry while supporting business. This is what Senate Bill 570 does. Section 1, Sub 2, describes what metal applies to this bill. You can see that the four main venues, agriculture, construction, transportation, and utilities, are covered fairly well through this section. Section 2 creates three new crimes that are Class A misdemeanors: unlawful altering metal property with the intent to deceive, making a false statement on the property or metal property record, unlawfully purchasing or receiving metal property, fails to report to the law enforcement within 24 hours for theft, altered, insulated wire. And this bill takes to the concept of transportation certificates similar to hay, timber products, and livestock and applies it to metal. The Oregon State Police will be assigned to develop the metal transportation certificate, and the violation of this is a Class C misdemeanor. This bill does add vehicle dealers, dismantlers, and towing businesses should they step into the business similar to metal recyclers. Then they are required as well to comply with the regulations for metal recyclers. This bill also adds aggravated factors involving the top four venues that I've already described to you. Disproportionate impact applies to the theft, first degree or aggravated theft. The offender caused damage to the property during the commission, and the cost of restoring the damaged property would be three times the value of the property that was taken, or the property taken creates a hazard to public health or safety or the environment. Additionally, Senate Bill 570 recriminalizes failure to maintain records, a Class C misdemeanor. It adds mobile tracking device as a tool for law enforcement. Also, what this bill does is it has no cash payment allowed, and it gives three business days for delayed check payment. This bill moves towards communication between law enforcement and the industry. It requires each district attorney to develop a plan involving the law enforcement community and the local metals recycler. This is a great step towards gaining some control of metal theft issue in our state. Thank you.
Co-carrier, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the scourge of metal theft affects each Oregonian, whether we know it or not. This bill is a significant step forward in fighting this problem and will help each and every Oregonian in ways that perhaps we will never know, whether it be in the form of lower utility costs, lower construction costs. Our transportation dollars will go further. Agriculture can be more efficient. This bill will do all of these things, and its effects, hopefully, will actually be never known because the metal theft will not occur. Now, colleagues, many of you have noticed, perhaps with some amusement, about the peculiar friendship and working relationship that has emerged with perhaps myself and my friend from Albany, my co-carrier. We like to think of ourselves as Batman and Robin, but most of you have referred to us as Yogi and Boo Boo. But this friendship, which has actually yielded some, I think, good public policy, not just in metal theft, but on a number of other bills, as well as the representative from West Salem's birthday, started because of the deep trust and close working relationship that we formed in this work group. He described that work group But that work group really represented many of us in this chamber. In particular, the representative from North Portland, her work should be commended and very much influenced this bill, and particularly the way this bill addresses the problem of stolen catalytic converters. The representative from North Eugene, as fingerprints can be seen throughout this bill, particularly in the way we address the disproportionate impact with certain sectors. It allowed us to actually target the most significant and salient crimes while mitigating and minimizing the fiscal impact of that targeting. It also, her influence can be seen in the no cash payments, which is perhaps among the more significant pieces of the bill. The representative from Gresham also influence can be felt throughout the bill. I really appreciate the opportunity to work with all of you and formulate this policy. It is actually, working on this bill has been perhaps the greatest honor of my brief professional career to date. Colleagues, it has been, again, an honor. I would like to once again acknowledge working with my friend from Albany and working with all of you. I urge its aye vote. This will help each and every Oregonian.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm pleased to see this bill before us today. It comprehensively will address the variety of problems faced in Oregon regarding metal theft. I heard a lot from my constituents during the interim on the particular issue of the removal of catalytic converters from cars in my district, and I wanted to thank the good representatives from Albany and Clackamas County and Senator Przanski for their work on this bill. The way that catalytic converters is addressed in the bill, it's very eloquently done. It defines catalytic converters as private metal property. It particularly says that if you are buying and selling catalytic converters when you shouldn't be, even if you're an auto dismantler as well as a scrap dealer, is going to be very important. And I also believe the ability, the no cash payment issue is going to be huge in my district. And I really want to thank everyone who's worked on this bill. This is very important for my district and for the entire state, and I urge your aye support.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a quick note to say to the bill.
To the bill.
To say my thanks to both the representative from Gotham and the representative from Jellystone. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
The representative from East Clackamas made a reference to disproportionate impact, so I wanted to speak for just a moment about how important this part was, and thank the representative from East Clackamas and also from Albany for their work in moving those aspects into this bill. No cash sales is indeed extremely important, and I thank the previous speakers for noting that. Disproportionate impact means if something is worse, and that's what we're talking about here. I think it's very important for us to dry up the market for this. The whole point being, of course, that it's scrap metal that is used to fuel the money that's available for meth addiction. Of course, we need to do much more in the way of drug and alcohol treatment, but we're doing our best to dry up the market here and make it much more difficult. Not only is the frustration growing, but the cost to individual taxpayers and also the cost to public agencies is getting to be enormous. And I wanted to tell you what the public safety impacts were that I wanted addressed in making sure that we included this phrase about disproportionate impact. Here are a few examples that I think make this a public safety problem, not just an inconvenience. Last year, there was a time period for more than 2 days when hundreds of homes in one Eugene neighborhood were left without phone service because someone had stolen the wires. No phone service means no lifeline or safety service for some of those people who might have needed it. There was a section of lights out on a trail, a very popular trail used not only for recreation but alternative transportation. The lights were out on that trail, and it cost $10,000 to get the wiring fixed, but that meant a couple of days without lights on the trail. It was another $10,000 to replace the underground wire that had been stolen that took the lights out for a ballpark. And even more alarming, I found out a story about some metal that had been stolen, the support for stands that people attending a sporting event, they sit in the stands. Had it not been noticed in advance, that could have been a tragedy in the waiting of a very large proportion if they hadn't figured that out before the tragedy happened. So we're talking about not only inconvenience, but public safety interference when you can't have transportation, commerce, or even communication because people are interfering with this. So thank you very much for the hard work that went into this. I'm supporting the bill with great enthusiasm. Thanks to the representatives and also to Senator Prezonsky.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is a great pleasure to hear this bill coming up on this floor today and being carried by two of my good friends in this chamber. This is also a great example of great minds think alike and a great example of collaboration both across the aisle and between the chambers. I also had presented a bill this session on legislation regarding metal theft. This came as a result of one of my constituents who had the great idea of mailing the check to whoever was selling the metal and to a real live place rather than giving people the cash. So I want to thank all the people who worked on this. Great job. Thank you so much for making us look good today.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Today I rise to speak to you about this bill because it's extremely important because my district is made up of primarily nursery stock and orchards and fruit-producing agriculture. For the nursery stock for us in northwestern Clackamas County, it is a costly process of loss of not only the metal, but the damage that's done to the plant material and replacing the equipment that can run into tens of thousands of dollars. So I am here today to urge your aye vote.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. I appreciate the comments from everybody on the floor and appreciate the input. There's a couple things I just want to share quickly here that the representative from East Clackamas and myself did during this session is we went out and visited Cherry City Recycling Center to get an opportunity to see where they were at and what they're doing today in compliance with the law that we passed 2 years ago. And they had met, if not exceeded, that of what was required of them by law. And there are many metal recyclers around the state that are in that mindset and are trying to do that. They have invested many dollars to combat this issue because they understand what the problem is right now. So I recognize that on their behalf for you that there are a lot of folks in this industry that are well above board. But there are some that are not as well. I want to recognize also Jeff Stone from the Nursery Association because he was the leader on the coalition for the last year and a half to 3 years that have met and dealt with this issue, and I appreciate his involvement. Karen Blythe as well, because she's with the Construction Industry Crime Prevention Group up in the metropolitan area, CICP, and she has deeply been involved as well. But there are three concerns I do have that I want to share with you as we've moved forward with this. One is that I do have a concern with the no cash issue. And during the time that we had met in our small work group, I brought this up three different times. Given the economic situation that we're in right now, we have a lot of people that have lost jobs. This could very easily be the only means for them to be able to put some food on the table. That was a concern that I had, and we addressed that. But we felt, as we reviewed the whole matter, that it was probably best to move forward to apply no cash. But again, it's something I want to bring to your attention. It is real. Another issue that I have that I've kind of alluded to it to some degree that I have a concern about is that we have placed an extreme amount of blame on the metal recycling industry themselves. I don't think that that's where the blame should rest. From my perspective in law enforcement, I've always felt that one of the areas that you really need to go after is the criminal themselves through sanctions. We've attempted to try to do that to some degree, not to the degree that I would like to have seen happen through this bill. And then finally, the last thing that I'd like to do is truly monitor this over the next 2 years to ensure that the compliance for communication with the district attorney, the law enforcement community, as well as the recycling industry themselves can work together to make this extremely effective. So thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I urge an aye vote.
Representative Hanna, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Potential conflict.
State your potential conflict, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In more than one business entity, our businesses handle recycled aluminum and other materials that may be dealt with in this legislation.
So noted for the record. I'm glad to hear that you're not confessing to be a metal thief. Any further conflicts to save for the record? Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 570B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Galizio, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, request return to courtesies.
Representative Galizio requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Galizio.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I actually think the classroom Charles Tigard Elementary School has already left the building, or is that, are you Charles Tigard? Oh, okay, fantastic. I thought during the Academy Award-winning speech from the East, the representative from East Clackamas, that they might have left, so fantastic. So like to, colleagues, please extend courtesies to about 100 students from Charles F. Tigard Elementary School from Tigard. I just said Tigard about six times. Ms. Mayor is their teacher, so welcome. Thank you.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Hope you enjoy your day in the Capitol. Further courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just want to take this opportunity this morning to publicly thank Thomas Cuomo. He's been my intern for the last several weeks, few months now, and has done an outstanding job, and I'm not going to give a job-seeking plug right now because he has a great job lined up. In fact, he's leaving me a little early because of that. So anyway, he has done an awesome job, and so if you get a chance today, please congratulate him on a job well done.
Further courtesies, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, over in the side aisle, if you'd stand up, is Corporal Joshua Griffin. He's assigned to the 5th Marines at Camp Pendleton. That's the 5th Marine Regiment. It's an infantry outfit. He's from Portland, and he's back home right now, and he's helping work with some of the Boy States kind of things, helping children. I appreciate you being here and spending the day at the Capitol. Thank you, Corporal.
Thanks for your service. Enjoy a day in the Capitol. Any further courtesies while we're here? Let's return then to third reading of Senate bills where we left off. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 728 relating to controlled substances.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 728. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, this bill comes to you from the judiciary where it passed unanimously. This bill says that a person who causes the death of a person through the manufacture or delivery of a Schedule 4 controlled substance is guilty of a Class C felony. What this is if I sell you, if I have Oxycontin, I sell you a prescription drug and you take it and die, then I'm responsible. measure stipulates that causation is established when the controlled substance plays a substantial role in the death of any person. There is a reclassification of the drug schedules of marijuana 2 through 5, and what happened there on the Senate side, they classified it backwards so that, like, marijuana would be heroin and heroin would be marijuana in the penalty phase, so we had to rewrite that to get that right. This is a good bill, minimal fiscal impact, according to the LFO, and deserves your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Van Orman votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Senate Bill 728B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 971, relating to training cost of employees of governmental agencies.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 971B. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill. Colleagues, this bill comes here from the Committee on the Judiciary. It stipulates reimbursement costs between governmental agencies for the training costs associated with parole and probation or police officers when an employee that received the training voluntarily from one government agency leaves for a position that requires the same training with another governmental agency. The reimbursement costs are paid by the governmental agency that hires the employee from the original government agency that paid for the training. The measure defines training costs as expenses including but not limited to salary, benefits paid during training, and the cost of the training courses required. It directs agencies to adopt rules for pro rata reimbursement schedule for training costs based on the time elapsed between completion of training and voluntary leaving employment. The bill defines a schedule for employees that are trained as police officers, parole officers, or deputy sheriffs, and separate reimbursement schedules for employees trained as local or state corrections officers. Measure stipulates that governmental agencies may waive the reimbursement for the training costs if they so choose. The measure also directs government agencies to develop and implement policies to promote retention. Employees require training. Fiscal impact of this bill is indeterminate. According to LFO, it has no revenue impact. Deserves your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
To the bill.
To the bill. Everyone needs to listen very closely to Representative Berger because she has no voice today.
Colleagues, bad bill. It handicaps good policemen and makes it harder for cities to hire good police staff. Bad bill. Vote no. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Olson.
I can't talk.
Yeah. We wish, but go
Thank
ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker,
Olson.
Colleagues. To the bill. Thank you. Yeah, I was, I voted no on this bill in committee, and I'm going to kind of share with you my reasoning behind why I did. Having had several conversations with sheriffs and chiefs around the state the last few weeks, they're not a real fan of this bill. You have a kind of a mixed bag out there, but the majority of the folks that I did talk to did not like it. It is a difficult thing to see a situation where you would mandate a police department or a sheriff's agency to the point where you would have them have a contractual agreement for a new hire that within whatever the time period be, 2 or 3 years, that they would have to remain with that agency during that time period. And should they decide to move on to another agency, place the responsibility of the new agency coming, hiring that individual
do have to reimburse a certain percentage for the training costs to that member. No doubt there are agencies out there, and a lot of you know this, that are training ground for police officers. There are agencies out there right now that do have agreements through contractual basis that doesn't apply this part for reimbursement, but with the understanding that I need to have you work for me for 3 years and then you can move forward. Bottom line on this bill, I don't like a mandate and allow the agencies themselves to make that decision. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Because my good friend voice is strained, I'm just going to share a letter from our police chief, Jerry Moore. It's briefly. He's concerned about the cost of the bill, but he also just discussed the bill with other chiefs throughout Marion County as well as the association director. He's not found a chief who's in favor of the bill, nor does he know of a chief who's the catalyst for the bill. And having moved from one agency to another early in his career, he believes it hamstrings individuals who are interested in moving to another agency for whatever reason they feel necessary. So he shared that with us. I would encourage you to not support the bill.
Further discussion, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. You know, my background in law enforcement, now fire, I would say that I understand the impact on a small agency. They hire, they recruit. You know, law enforcement, public safety, they're popular jobs. There's a large pool of candidates. But when you get right down to it, you have X amount of qualified people to do those jobs. And when you make an investment in somebody, I can understand why you would want them to make an investment in you. There are many agreements out there, as the good representative from Albany had said, three-year mandate understandings, let's call them, not necessarily contractual obligation. And those are the conversations that should be had. I think we need to recognize, too, that many folks leave an agency not at their own will. They leave because maybe a spouse got transferred. Maybe there's a problem within their family. Maybe the area just wasn't a good fit. And I would sure hate to see that agencies are put on the hook for one another. I think there's a professional conduct standard that's out there amongst our law enforcement and our public officials. And I tend to think we should let them manage through this. So I'll be voting no on this bill, even though I'm a huge supporter of public safety and law enforcement.
Further discussion, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm probably one of those cops that this bill was focused on or thought about when it was written. Many years ago, late 80s, I had my first job as a cop in Grant County, John Day, population 7,4500 square miles. I was 21 and still the same size, maybe a little smaller. But anyway, it was a great place and I loved it, but it wasn't the best fit. I was there 16 months. They sent me to the academy. Yeah, it did cost them money. They invested in my field officer training. That cost them money. And I started applying and subsequently left the district. And I was picked up by another agency. I bet that second agency would have had a hard time looking at me as a candidate if they knew, ooh, we're going to have to pay the bill for this girl. And I think, quite frankly, I think both agencies benefited. So I think we need to be thinking about that when we're looking at this. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Sometimes it's just not the right fit. But you know what? We need to allow the agencies to make that decision, and we need to allow the flexibility. I urge a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this was a bill that a lot of work was put into over on the Senate side, and numerous meetings and negotiation and discussion amongst a whole variety of stakeholders. And the heart of this is simply that it's about trying to improve retention of police officers, and it's trying to get to the issue of fairness when it comes to who should shoulder the cost for paying those for the training of those police officers. If one agency has flipped the bill for the training, then if the person shortly thereafter flees to go to the next job, it's a concern, and we often will have to pay the price for that. And as chair of the Public Safety Subcommittee of Ways and Means, I can tell you that this is going to be a very important issue when it comes to trying to save the our states and counties money. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I really hadn't planned to speak today. In fact, this bill came as a surprise to me. And I can appreciate a lot of what I've heard here today. I can appreciate the comments from the good representative from the Covered Bridge Capital. I spent a year in Grant County myself, and that particular employment lasted the contract of one school year when my spouse decided it wasn't a good fit. But this is exactly the plea that comes to me every time I turn around from my small police departments. The city of Toledo specifically has done a wonderful job of training officers for all sorts of agencies, and they struggle with that. I'm very glad that the good Senator Verger, from who shares a district with me, brought this bill forward, and I'm going to be supporting it.
Further discussion, Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm going to be supporting this bill. I think it's really important. You know, training is a big issue in a lot of different industries. And unfortunately, there's companies, agencies, or whatever that sort of game the system a little bit and don't put in their fair share of training dollars, which ends up hurting those that do provide training dollars and do a good job of doing it. It puts a disincentive into us providing training dollars at the state level if everybody's not paying their fair share. And I think this bill attempts to do that. I'm not saying it gets all the way there, but I think it's a good step. I urge an aye vote.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill. In committee, we discussed this at some length. I do urge an aye vote on the bill. The light bulb for me went off when I considered $100,000 that could be applied to a given staffer, to a given officer in a given community. And let's say I'm a budgeter and I have $100,000, and I can either budget for $100,000 worth of salary and benefits, or I can budget for, let's say, $80,000 worth of salary and benefits plus $20,000 worth of training. If I know that I can hire somebody from somewhere else who's already got the training, I will eliminate the training from my choice in budgeting that $100,000. And I think it does provide a relatively significant disincentive to providing that training. And I also want to say to people in the upper deck, I mean, this is an issue that came to some significant discussion, and I do urge your aye vote. Thanks very much.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Barker, do you wish to close?
Thank you. Just briefly, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, when this bill started out, it would have been the officer who left would have had to pay out of his or her pocket back to the department. They amended it so that the governmental agency who's hiring the officer would have to pay it. But the company who's losing the employee could waive that if they wanted to. So in the cases where a spouse were to move and the husband or wife follows and has to change jobs, the new department could take a look at that and the old department could take a look at that and say, that's okay, we don't mind that, and let it go. If a police department, I'll use for the example, hires an untrained officer, they have to pay for the training. So if they hire somebody who's trained, just trained, this only lasts and it's prorated up to 3 years, then they have to pay that portion back. The smaller departments like Toledo do suffer as people move on. Most of the chiefs in Oregon that I'm aware of kind of have a gentleman's agreement about not hiring away somebody who was just trained. I know the state police, when somebody comes out of the academy to be a sheriff or a city officer, gets hired and they go to the state police and say, gee, I'd like to be a state trooper. They say, come back and see us in a few years. You've got to put in some time where you were trained. That's why it usually works. This would help in those cases, especially the smaller departments around the state that are training people and they lose and they don't ever have a cadre of trained, developed officers. This would be a good bill. I ask for your aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bailey, how do you vote? Bailey votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Chris Edwards votes aye. Representative Kenemer votes aye. Senate Bill 971B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 344, relating to county officers and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 344C. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, every once in a while, the legislature has an opportunity to do a little bit to help some of our local government partners, and this bill is an example of that. There are two parts of this bill. The original part of the bill makes county surveyors appointed positions to be appointed by the county's governing body unless their charter or ordinance provides otherwise. The second part of the bill responds to an issue that developed recently with respect to certification for elected sheriffs, specifically the sheriff in my county. Several legislators, including people from other counties, wanted the legislature to try to solve a problem, and we convened interested parties, including DPSST, the governor's office, county sheriffs, or the sheriff's association, and we have a very specific, narrow, reasonable fix to allow an elected sheriff to put his energy into the things he should be putting his energy into, which is steering that agency back to a helpful place in law enforcement rather than spending time as a rookie trainee at the academy. This bill is very narrowly focused. It has support of all the groups I just mentioned, and it comes to you from committee on a unanimous vote. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill, if you have any angst at all about the bill, keep in mind it is very narrowly focused, and really read at the end of the bill the qualification certifications necessary to fit within this category. Very narrowly focused, and I can tell you this is not only good policy, but it's good politics. There's not a place I could walk in within my constituency and ask a question if this was reasonable and have anybody respond with anything other than absolutely. To send somebody with the qualifications that's already done the job to a training academy away from their duties and responsibilities that they have to their county would absolutely be wrong. And for us to not get involved at this point would be wrong as well. So I commend the legislature for getting involved in this issue. It's unfortunate that we had to. It's too bad that it came down to this, but it does come down to this bill, and I certainly urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And colleagues,
To the bill.
Sheriff Skipper is one of the finer law enforcement men in the state of Oregon. I've known him over 30 years, and it would be a great waste of the county's resources and Sheriff Skipper's time to have to go back as though he was a new 21-year-old and go through the recruit academy. This is a really good bill and deserves all of our support. Thank you.
For the discussion, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. This is a busy day for me. Sheriff Skipper is a constituent in my district, and I think it's demeaning and insulting that a man with that experience is forced to take a training course, as the good representative from Aloha has just pointed out. So I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
highlighted to.
She does. Thank you, Representative. And I'm sorry, this is new to this. How many counties have elected surveyors?
Ooh, trick question. I don't know the answer, Representative.
Follow-up?
Hannah, further questions? Carrie Reeld?
Yes.
She does.
Is anyone here who can help answer that question?
Not sitting at my desk. Had I had this question ahead of time, I would have had someone here who was more attuned to that than I am. Sorry.
Follow-up.
Representative Hannah, further questions?
I'm sorry, Representative. I didn't do this as a surprise. It surprised me that the sheriff piece ended up in the surveyor piece, not the other way around. So,
I'd yield to a follow-up, yes.
Well, to the bill.
Oh, okay.
Representative Hannah, to the bill.
Given that we don't know how many county charters would have to be changed to accommodate this piece of legislation, which is now much more about a single sheriff's issue. So, look, maybe the sheriff thing is great, right? Maybe it is fantastic. It could be that this sheriff is the most qualified sheriff in Oregon. I do not know that, and this is not, my comment isn't relative to that. But are we passing a piece of legislation that requires how many counties to change their county charter if they want to have an elected assessor? And that was my question, is are we creating more work by doing this? And I hope the answer is no. Given that, I won't be able to support this piece of legislation.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do, Mr. Speaker, because while I don't know the number of counties, I do know that the bill allows county charter or county ordinance to provide for an elected surveyor. I also do know that the original bill addressed assessors, and that part was deleted in the Senate. So the bill no longer applies to the position of county assessor. The original section applies only to the position of county surveyor, and it allows charters of counties and even local ordinances to exempt that county. So in response to the question about how much work would be necessary, I believe the answer is none, because the county can pull themselves out. And my good friend from the historic Tualatin District has just told me that that there are 20 counties that currently have surveyors. The final thing I would say in closing on the second part of the bill is that I want to extend personal thanks to Mr. Minnis, who is the director of DPSST, for his work in helping craft the language relating to the elected sheriff training and his support for this bill now. I'll also tell people that this bill came across from the Senate, the original part, with 25 yes votes and 5 no votes. So had broad support in the Senate, broad support here in the House, and I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Excuse business of the House. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Matthews, are you in the queue for this bill? Senate Bill 344C, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like a unanimous consent to return to the business of courtesies.
Representative Matthews requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? So ordered. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And colleagues, I'd just like to direct your attention and welcome to our Capitol. A man I have a great deal of respect for. He has served our community for 34 years and will continue to do so as a sheriff of Multnomah County. That's Robert Skipper. And Sheriff Skipper, thanks for coming to the Capitol. It's great to see you. And thank you, colleagues. Appreciate it.
Any further? Thank you very much for your service. And good luck spending more time on the job instead of training. Any further courtesies while we're here? So we have finished up third reading of Senate bills. This now puts us back under propositions and motions, so I think our intent is to just now go back down through the order. So we're back to possible reconsideration of Senate Bill 734. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass Senate Bill 734.
Representative Beyer moves that the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass Senate Bill 734. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think this is a bill that would benefit from a much broader audience, and I urge we reconsider.
Is there further discussion just on this motion to reconsider? Seeing none, Representative Beyer does not wish to close. Those are of the opinion that the House should reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass Senate Bill 734 will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bailey, how do you vote?
Aye.
Bailey votes aye. Representative Bruhn votes aye. I'm sorry, Representative Bruhn votes no. Representative Bruhn votes no. Everybody correct on the board? The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. In compliance with Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedures, Section 468, Subsection 3, the question immediately recurs on final consideration of Senate Bill 734. We are under the point of discussion. Is there discussion? This is discussion on the main contents of the bill. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Yesterday, I went on for a little over 5 minutes, and today I will spare the 16 people that weren't here, I think it was 16, from another little rant about why I oppose this. But I do want to let you know that I proposed an amendment that would require state employees to pay $40 a month if they attested to the fact that they smoke, those of state workers, to include us, that don't smoke, would not have $40 deducted from their pay. But HIPAA, federal laws, require that if you are going to have a premium surcharge for smoking, it's associated with a wellness program, it requires that you have an opt-out provision. So that means that every state employee who is a smoker and attests to the fact that they're a smoker cannot or would not have that $40 a month withdrawn from their pay if they participated in a smoking cessation program. My amendment offered that. There are several organizations who oppose that amendment. And the question is, do these organizations truly want Oregonians to stop smoking, or do they only want some Oregonians to stop smoking. It's interesting how sometimes we pick who we want to pick on, and sometimes those decisions appear to be political rather than based on the reality of current law and the law that says incentives, both positive and negative, work. I will be a no vote on this reconsideration, and I would urge you to do the same. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Wingert.
Since we're in the business of we're in the business of adding mandates because we apparently don't have as much concern about how much we raise the cost of insurance, a plea that I have made repeatedly with this body, I'll just throw out for you that there are 77 mandates we still haven't passed in the state of Oregon that exist in other states, some really good ones. Alzheimer's. I mean, we could do that one. Ambulance services, birthing centers, cancer medications. Come on. Cancer medications. Chemotherapy. Cleft palate. Hair prosthesis. You know, we can consider that one. Kidney disease. TMJ disorders. Other fertility services. There's over 77, so we can just keep going and raising the cost of health insurance for folks and watch them drop off as they can't afford it. I urge a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I just wanted to offer to the good representative from Wilsonville that if he could get that list to my office, I could do a priority bill here at the end of session, as long as autism services are included in that.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, we're back to the original carrier of the bill from yesterday. Representative Girard, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'm glad reinforcements are here. Please vote yes on this bill.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Bruin votes no. Representative Gilman votes no. Senate Bill 734, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Further propositions and motions, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2067 and repass the bill.
Representative Barnhart moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2067 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill is the Administration of Oregon Tax Credits bill that the House passed some time ago and sent to Senate to the Committee on Finance and Revenue. That committee worked this bill pretty hard and ended up moving the sunset dates in block. If you recall, we had three groups of sunsets for the Oregon Tax Credits. January 1, 2014, 1/16, and 1/18, and they moved them all back 2 years, with a couple of minor exceptions where things were changed. The Public University Venture Development Fund, for example, kept the sunset date of January 1, 2016, and therefore moved into the third category. Colleagues, the discussion on the House floor involved an issue having to do with rural medical practice. and the issue of the need to attract physicians. And the Senate made what I thought was an ingenious change to the bill by adding an internal 10-year sunset. So if a physician is receiving the credit on the date of the sunset, the sunset doesn't actually apply to that physician, assuming that they continue to qualify for an additional 10 years. So the object, of course, is to assure physicians who agree to set up a rural practice that they will be able to continue receiving this credit even after the sunset date. I consider that to be a good change, but it doesn't change the administrative issue, which will allow the legislature to continue to look at these sunsets as they come up. Now, I want to note a couple of things that I think are significant. The bill, when it came to you last time, required a simple majority vote. LC, in its wisdom, has determined that it requires a 3/5 vote now. And my standing objection to that definition of our law, of our constitutional law, stands. I don't want to repeat it here, but I've said it before. The reason for that change on LC's part is that moving these sunset dates has the effect of indicating an increase in revenue in out biennia, in the two biennia following the one that we are budgeting for in this session, which would not be the case if the House bill were applied. Now, the reality is that would only happen if these sunsets actually go into effect. That is, that the legislature takes no further action. But that's not the intent. As I indicated in the opening that I gave to the bill when it was on the House floor before, the purpose of this measure is to allow for an orderly administration of the Oregon-only tax credits, allow the legislature to consider each of these credits in an orderly way, and in fact require that if the credit is to continue, that the legislature actually do that. It is a 6-year cycle for these credits rather than the normal 2-year cycle that we have for all general fund budget items. But it is a cycle that we believe the Revenue Committee and the Finance and Revenue Committee of the Senate will be able to manage without additional resources. Colleagues, this is a great bill for the administration of Oregon's tax system. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No.
Those who are of the opinion that the House should concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2067 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. This vote requires a 3/5 majority. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes no. House Bill 2067B, having received the required 3/5 majority, is declared repassed. Representative Greenlech, further propositions and motions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2589 and repass the bill.
Representative Greenlee moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2589 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is another special for the representative from Wilsonville. House Bill 2589 is an insurance mandate for hearing aids for children. For dependent children in health plan contracts. The Senate rationally defined dependent children as health insurance contracts do, up to and including children in college up to age 23 and include them included them in coverage. There was some very moving testimony from a college-age, hearing-impaired dependent urging this, and the Senate agreed to it, and I suggest we also concur with that and repass the bill.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Greenlick does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2589 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes no. House Bill 2589A, having received... Oh. Which one is it? I'll get there in a second. House Bill 2589, having received that constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House not concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3099 and that a conference committee be appointed.
Representative Nolan moves the House not concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3099. And a conference committee be appointed. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate got pretty close, but I think they didn't quite get there in their amendments, and we should work with them in conference committee to get this bill ready to pass across our floor again.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of the opinion the House not concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3099 and a conference committee be appointed will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. Okay. Those of the opinion that the House not concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3099 and a conference committee be appointed will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Riley votes no. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. The motion to not concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3099 and a conference committee be appointed is declared adopted. Propositions. Oh, sorry about that. First readings, House bills.
House Bill 3503, relating to Oregon Project Independence and declaring an emergency.
Bills read the first time, passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading, House bills.
House Bill 5011, relating to Financial Administration and the Employment Relations Board, appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5012, relating to Financial Administration and Employment Relations Board and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5021, relating to Financial Administration and the Commission of Judicial Fitness and Disability, appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5028, relating to Financial Administration of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5048, relating to Financial Administration of the Department of Veterans Affairs, appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2167, relating to distribution of 911 taxes. House Bill 2222, relating to State Department of Fish and Wildlife and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2223, relating to State Department of Fish and Wildlife fees and appropriate implementing House Bill 2442 relating to care providers, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency.
Bills read the second time are passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3065 relating to the Oregon Supplemental Income Program.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3065. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3065 proposes a change to the Department of Human Services, DHS authority in the administration of the Oregon Supplemental Income Program, which is known as OSIP, allowing the program to be operated more efficiently while offering more substantial benefits for Oregon seniors and people with disabilities. It is truly a win-win bill, a rare occurrence during normal economic times and even rarer in light of today's economic climate. OSIP includes the supplemental income payments and the special needs payments, ORS 411-704 to 706 requires DHS to issue both types of payments, special needs. The SIP for special needs payments provides small cash payments to certain individuals who qualify for the Federal Supplemental Security Income Program. Currently, most people receive $1.70 per month or $20.40 annually. Individuals who are blind get an additional monthly payment of $25. It is estimated that each check costs Department of Human Services roughly $4 to print, mail, and reconcile. Approximately 200,000 SIP checks are issued biannually with a cost of $1.1 million general fund. The direct benefit to clients during the 07-09 biennium was just over $2 million. It should be noted that over 40,000 SIP checks still have not been cashed. House Bill 3065 allows for administrative savings to Department of Human Services. Additionally, Department of Administrative Services may also see administrative savings since they will not be mailing and handling as many checks. The total amount of savings cannot be defined until program changes are established by rule. But I appreciate the direction from the Ways and Means Committee. The savings that are being made out of this is just under $1 million, are going to be applied toward the OPI project. House Bill 3065 creates efficiency in governmental processes while offering substantial benefits to clients. This bill does not decrease funding for the program. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Co-carrier Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3065 allows the Department of Human Services to provide non-cash benefits to individuals who receive assistance under the Oregon Supplemental Income Program. That program provides small cash payments or special needs allowances to needy individuals who are 65 years of age and older, blind, or disabled. The Department of Human Services now makes cash payments through monthly or annual checks, often for amounts less than $5, with the cost of printing, mailing, tracking, and other administrative work related to the checks exceeding the amount of the cash benefits received. House Bill 3065 would allow Department of Human Services to redirect the cash benefits to other, more meaningful assistance. This does not reduce overall funding available for program services, but would save administrative costs of almost $1 million in general fund each biennium. Department of Human Services budget will be adjusted for these savings in Senate Bill 5529, the agency's budget bill. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 3065. So you got to hear it twice, two different ways. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, pay attention to the bill. Pay attention to this bill. This is a great example of two people working together across the aisle and a really good bill that helps people who are disabled, and it saves the state $1 million. This is a wonderful bill, and I'm very proud of two members of my committee who put this together and also invited me to sign on. Thank you so much.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 3065, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3237, related to elections and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3237A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill came to us in a form that's slightly different than it ended up, and I wanted to mention it had one of those relating clauses relating to elections that invites people to stop by and talk to us, and so we ended up with a number of amendments. The original bill basically said, from the proponent's perspective, we want to clarify the language when we're renewing, in particular, an election in the county that has to do with the local option tax. I always forget that name. Local option tax. And so what it does, currently, whenever you have a local option tax, it will say that it will increase your taxes. This amendment says if you've already had a local option tax and the new one is just a renewal of that local option tax, instead of saying it will raise your taxes, it will say this is a renewal of your local option tax. So it changes that language on the ballot. Then we realized that there were a couple little fixes that we needed to make to a bill we sent out of here fairly easily a while back, 2005. And some people, including the Secretary of State and the Executive Director of Common Sense for Oregon, came and said, we kind of, when we wrote one part of that bill, we inadvertently put at risk some people that we didn't mean to. They really, and that meaning the chief petitioners, and it fixes it so that only if the chief petitioner actually is part of committing the crime will they be liable. It doesn't, and it changed that. The Secretary of State and the others came to an agreement on that language, and they put that in the bill. And then we had some amendments regarding how we go about when we're redistricting out in the future. How do we organize our precincts? And so it said left a number of up to 5,000 voters in a precinct, but it talked about not having islands in different precincts so that we combine those together at the next time we do this into larger districts that are contiguous. It also talked about, part of the conversation was that there are congressional districts and our precincts and all these other things that don't necessarily line up. And if you look at the voter information that comes out after an election, there are actually people and small groups of three and four families who can get identified exactly how they vote because they're in one and not in the other. And so when you look at the two, you can kind of figure that out. We didn't like that, so the idea was to make sure that those kind of boundaries lined up so we don't get those kind of irregularities. But that will not take place until 2012 when we have our next redistricting. That's pretty much the extent. So it became kind of a clean up a number of areas bills after having started out originally as just having a change with regard to how you put on the ballot raising taxes as opposed to this will renew your already existing tax. So that's pretty much it. I urge you to vote aye.
Further discussion, and Representative Berger is next in the queue. Again, if we could have a little greater degree of silence to accommodate her laryngitis. Representative Berger.
To the bill. I'm getting better.
To the bill.
You will note, colleagues, that I voted no on this bill. There are some good things and some bad things in this bill. One of the reasons that I voted no was to alert you that the counties had real objection to the cost of some of the things that are in this bill. There's no fiscal to us. Also, I think this discussion of what we do with precincts after redistricting it maybe starts here, but we need a much larger, better discussion on that subject. I did like the provisions that helped the other bill that we passed, 2005. The main provision of the bill on what goes on a ballot envelope, I don't like anything on ballot envelopes except the language that says this is a ballot, open it and use it. I have never liked language on ballot envelopes, and I don't like the main bill provision of the bill. So that's why I voted no. you can hear the provisions. It's a mixed bag in here. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Schaffler.
I support the bill, but it's always good in America that the opposition have a voice.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the House, that the bill should pass, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Esquivel votes no. Representative Garrard votes no. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes no. House Bill 3237A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 767, relating to public charter schools and declaring an emergency.
Bill read for the first time has passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 284 relating to civil actions.
Bill read for the second time has passed the third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders that they have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask for unanimous consent to suspend the rules in order to allow Representative Cameron to change his vote on Senate Bill 971. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Nolan requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended so that Representative Cameron can change his vote on Senate Bill 971. Is there any objection? Oh, is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Cameron, how do you vote?
No.
He votes no. Further announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats, I would like to have a brief caucus immediately following floor session, and the sooner we assemble, the sooner we can all get to lunch, please.
Further announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans, we will caucus at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Further announcements? Effective immediately, I am appointing the following representatives to the Conference Committee on House Bill 2175. Representative Jeff Barker, Chair. Representative Chris Garrett. Representative Gene Wisnett. Also, just a reminder, tonight, Convention Center, 6 o'clock, sign a diaparter. Hope to see people there. Skits are at 7, just so you wanted to make sure you knew that. Further announcements? Seeing none. Remonstrances. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial and Museum was the scene of a shocking tragedy yesterday. An 88-year-old man described by authorities as a white supremacist walked in the museum and opened fire. The museum was filled with school children and many other visitors. All survived except for Stephen T. Johnson, the security guard who died heroically to save them. The Holocaust Memorial Museum was built to stimulate leaders and citizens to confront hatred, prevent genocide, promote human dignity, and strengthen democracy. While our nation has made gains, this and other recent events show why the museum is needed now more than ever. Yesterday's tragedy was one of multiple acts of political violence we've seen recently. A 23-year-old Army private, William Andrew Long, was shot and killed outside a recruiting office this month in Arkansas, and a fellow soldier was wounded. The suspect, a Muslim convert, said he considers the killing justified because of the U.S. military presence in the Middle East. Last month, abortion provider Dr. George Tiller was shot to death in his church. The man accused of killing is a longtime vocal opponent of abortion. All of these acts need to be condemned and condemned loudly. Colleagues, this body often engages in heated debates, and these debates reflect philosophical and political differences among members. But we remain civil because we recognize that we, as Oregonians, are committed to making the state a better place. Please join me in a moment of silence for these recent victims of political violence, which deserves no place in our society.
Please stand for a moment of silence.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Further remonstrances. Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's sort of a difficult transition, and I apologize for that, but I appreciate Representative Maurer's comments. I rise to speak about a personal matter that I think needs to be discussed publicly. It was a few weeks ago that we honored Mr. Young, the author of a religious novel that's internationally acclaimed called The Shack. And I talked about one of the concepts in there, a wonderful concept, the great sadness. It's about how traumas happen in our life, and they tend to impact us personally, and perhaps our relationships and other things. And I alluded to the reality that the campaign that I suffered last time was such a tragedy in my life, a great sadness. $610,000 were spent against me. A total of 18 hit pieces and a nasty video. Six of these hit pieces were of a personal, maligning, false nature, including a malicious video for cable TV. Yes, they demeaned my marriage. They assailed my wife falsely, and they assailed my motives, my personal motives and actions, falsely. Starting in December, I began to try to reach out to see if there was not a way to moderate this. And I was promised an attempt to negotiate or mediate twice, and as of Tuesday, that one failed again. It's painful to get a phone call from your granddaughter, and she says, Grandma, and she's crying. She says, why are all the kids at school saying these terrible things about you and Grandpa? And my wife and I are trying to have a discussion about what we should do, and she bursts into sobs and is inconsolable. Or the old lady in Fred Meyer just a few weeks ago who says, aren't you that politician? Yeah, you're Kenemer, the guy who gave his wife a cushy job. That's what that was about. I urge you to come over here and look at these and see what your future is about if we're going to keep letting campaigns devolve. And I thank you for your time.
Further remonstrances. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had the pleasure of running against my colleague and friend over here from Canby a few years ago for county commission. And I was urged to go negative against him, and I thought about it. I seriously considered it. I did not. And I remember and he handed me my hat in a basket, I admit it. But I remember when I got the mailings and I saw him holding his grandchild, that on that day morning I was grateful that I did not go negative. I will stand here on this floor and tell you I raised a good amount of money in my campaign that paid for some of those pieces. I am sorry that these campaigns have sunken into the gutter, and that's where we are, and that's what got a lot of us here, either for us or against us, in spite of us. And if I ever caused any pain to his family or any of yours, I personally apologize, and I hope and I believe we can do better.
Further remonstrances. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it takes an extreme amount of courage for you to stand up to do what you've just done, and I really appreciate that. And I wouldn't have wanted to bring this up, but it's been on my mind this entire time. I never came here to be one of 31 votes or one of 36 people. I came to be one of 60 that would move Oregon forward. And I understand that we're not going to be on the same train each and every vote. But what I'll leave with is an extreme pride that we put our veterans first, that we made bipartisan legislation happen, and that we were able to make those things happen together collectively. What I'll also keep in mind the entire time is that everybody in this room, all 60 of us, are just like one another. We have an extreme amount of pride in our community. We want to walk with the best interest in mind, with the ability to explain whatever it is we do down here. And I think it goes further than that, because what we do here is only effective if we can build relationships while we're here. Those relationships are in this room. There was a defining moment in my campaign, and I will forever stand proud to say I refuse to run a TV ad. And as I told 9 people on the phone, it was me. It was my name that would ultimately be criticized for running that. We can blame everybody else out there, and we can call them puppet masters, and you know what? Unfortunately, there's folks within our own leadership. They're part of that scheme. But the bottom line is, what I'm going to ask you to do is really consider how many of us were working together when somebody says, we're going to go after that guy. Well, that guy happens to be a friend of mine. That guy's on the other side of the aisle, but that guy's a friend of mine. I'm not going after that guy. Think about what it is that got us here and that made us successful. And at the end of the day, really, ask yourself, is it your integrity or your credibility? Because ultimately, it's a reflection of you as a campaign, not the individuals that orchestrate it. So I appreciate, again, thanks for the courage. I will look at those. Representative from Happy Valley, extreme class to step up and say that, you know, you're a part of that and to take ownership. But in the end, we as individuals ultimately are responsible for our own campaign. You are the people whose name goes out. Whether or not it has it on there, if it's a hit piece against your opponent, it comes back to you. Just try to walk with pride and leadership, and thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Tomei.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 9:45 a.m. on Friday, June 12th.
Representative Tomei moves House adjourn until 9:45 a.m. Friday, June 12, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.